Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Now, it's really my pleasure to introduce James Sudakow. He's an author and owner of CH Consulting, a boutique management and organizational effectiveness consulting practice. He's also the author of the book, Picking the Low-Hanging Fruit and Other Stupid Stuff We Say in the Corporate World. And I love that. I just have to tell you, James, I love the title, and I know we're going to have fun with this.
Thanks. I had fun writing it.
James, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your company, and how you came to write the book.
So first, thanks for having me on the show. So a little bit about me. So I actually spent my first 8 years or so out of my master's program at working at Deloitte Consulting, which is, you know, one of the biggest consulting firms in the world. And that's basically where I started hearing a lot of this language. You know, since then, I've had several leadership roles inside of tech and med tech companies, and then started my own consulting practice about 8 years ago to kind of venture out on my own as an entrepreneur. And so really, the verbiage that I put in this book started at the beginning of my career, and it hasn't stopped. It's out there. It's all over the place, and you almost can't get out of the way of it at times. And so I finally just decided to write a book about it, poke a little fun at ourselves, and maybe make a small degree of change. If we can get a few people to stop using a few of these terms, that'll be great.
Well, that's a good start. Dan, do you want to ask the first question?
Sure, I'd be happy to. What did you see 8 years ago or nine or whenever it was you made the decision that you were going to leave wherever you were and start your own business? What need did you see wasn't being met?
Oh, it's a great question. So what was really interesting, so when I left to start this firm, it was about 2009. And if you guys remember, at that point in time, we were in the middle of just coming out of the, you know, the whole Great Recession. And at that time, I had a good job. I was a VP of talent and org effectiveness in a, you know, multi-billion-dollar global company, and things were going well. But if you remember, that was a period of time where lots of positions were being eliminated, especially in the talent space, you know, for better or for worse. You know, companies were saying, hey, that's important to us, but if we really got to get down to it, you know, right now we got to focus on nuts and bolts of operations because that's where we're at. And a lot of companies were feeling that at the time. And my job was maintained. I actually left on my own volition. But what I started to realize is that companies actually really needed that help. They needed the organizational transformation help because a lot of companies were having to really think very differently about how they worked. And they certainly needed the help on talent, right? People are huge differentiators for a company, you know, and they're the ones that come up with the innovations that make the company, you know, differentiated in the market. They're the ones, the people are the ones that really kind of help for long-term sustainability. So essentially what I started to see was that companies really wanted this work. They just didn't want the roles on the books, if you know what I mean. And so there was a huge need, and I walked out and started this consulting practice, quite honestly, mostly because my wife said, you need to finally do this. You've been talking about it forever. And I finally did it, and what I thought would happen actually happened, and that was that companies were looking for this kind of help. It's just they wanted it to be external for a while. They didn't have the resources at the time to do it internally to support some of their strategic talent planning and workforce planning needs and big org transformation needs, but they desperately wanted the work. And that's kind of where the, you know, the genesis of the practice came from.
Interesting, because at that particular point in time, I think corporate America collectively made an absolutely horrendous mistake.
Oh, yeah.
The management of corporations across the board in every sector in this desire to react to the Great Recession, felt that personnel cost was the area in which they could achieve the greatest gain and preserving profitability.
Exactly.
And what they found out, what they actually did, is that they let go of the middle. The middle was where the experience was. And so they were left with a barbell strategy.
Yeah.
One end of the barbell, you had the corporate executives, and at the other end, you had the recent hires. And there was nothing in the middle. And so they realized that after a while that they couldn't run the company with the personnel that they had, but yet they were reluctant to add to overhead because they didn't know what the direction of the economy was going to be. Hence, your opportunity to come in and be a consultant as opposed to a full-time employee. So you had great vision.
Yeah, well, and what was interesting is exactly what you said. They had no one to operationalize strategy. Right at the top, they were able to come up with what their strategies were, and a lot of times those strategies were pretty creative given what was going on in the macro economy, but they didn't have anyone to actually put it into play, anyone that was experienced enough to understand how to translate strategy into operations. And so that's where I started filling the gap and then started building my practice to build other resources and people to come in and help fill the gap. What's interesting is it's still just as viable, 8 years down the road, even though a lot of these organizations have kind of gotten smart and said, hey, we do need to bring some of those capabilities back in-house. You know, they still kind of look for and want some of that external, whether it be just kind of peer consulting and ideation or whether actually it's the ability to come in and operationalize and execute. So it filled a gap, and so far that gap is still sustaining. So that's good news for me.
How has your business changed in terms of the number of people you have working with you today versus when you started in 2009?
It's actually more than it was then because I'm a fairly cautious entrepreneur. And so, I literally launched this will sound almost pathetic, but I literally launched with two clients. And, my goals were really almost rudimentary where I said, I'm going to launch a new client and keep my two clients every year. And that's the goal. And so at the beginning, I didn't really need additional resources. I was able to handle the work. I always knew I wanted it to grow beyond that. But for the first few years, I didn't need it. And then as business started really kind of exploding, I got to the point where, I had to find a better scalable model. And that's where I started leveraging subcontractors. I never wanted to bring on the burden of payroll. As a very small organization, I decided that payroll was more of a challenge than I wanted to manage. And so I leveraged the subcontractor model, and that's been working great. So I have this broad network of people that I pull in as necessary based upon the skill sets required for the work. And then they're not tied to me either. They're able to leverage and move around whatever they need to do. And that's been working really well.
Well, I understand where you're going. I mean, I'm working on a consulting opportunity right now. And what I said to the president of the company, you need a ton of things. You need to be able to establish a brand. You don't have a website. You don't have any marketing materials. You don't have a story. You don't have a mission statement. And I will help you get all of that. And there will be times when I'll have to bring in people, contractors, to do the work, and then when their work's done, they're gone.
Exactly.
And trying to minimize the amount of overhead that the company is spending while they're waiting, where the company management, who's trying to figure out where they want the company to go, then has all this overhead that they got to figure out, well, what am I going to give them to do while I'm waiting to do other things? So
right,
I think that
right.
the gig economy is going to get larger and larger and larger, and it allows individuals like you, myself, and Don to have diverse businesses that can change on a dime to do one thing or another, and you never know what the phone is going to bring when that phone rings and
that's exactly
what
right.
you're going to be working on.
Yeah, and that's what keeps
you
fun, too,
yeah.
quite honestly.
Yes, yeah, keeps you challenged.
Yeah.
Is there a particular part of any market? Do you work in very specific areas? I mean, certain kinds of company is your sweet spot, or do you business with everybody?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I don't actually market myself towards any sort of specific industry because even though I would say org transformation and talent needs, there are some industry-specific nuances, of course, but generally speaking, the strategies aren't that different, at least from my own experience. That being said, from an org transformation perspective, I have been doing a lot of work with healthcare simply because it is one of the biggest, most transforming industries out there right now, and it's a really big, pretty difficult transformation healthcare is going through, as we all know. And so I work with hospital systems, med device companies. You know, I had experience working internally in med device as well before I launched my own practice. And, you know, everybody's trying to figure it out. And it's for hospitals in particular, it is it's about as big of a change as you could possibly imagine for them to think about their business. So that's where I spend a lot of time on the org transformation work. On the talent stuff, it's really across the gamut, no industry specific focus.
Let's talk a little bit about your book.
Yeah.
Picking the Low-Hanging Fruit and Other Stupid Stuff We Say in the Corporate World. Give us some more examples of other stupid stuff we say.
Well, I'd have to say my all-time favorite is baking people into the process. I don't know if you ever heard that one or if you even used it. I don't know why we came up with that, but this notion of baking people into the process is one that actually drives me nuts. Building straw dogs makes me laugh, although it's just a simple outline. And one of my favorites is when we call projects sexy projects. I've never understood how we got there, how that became part of the corporate vernacular. But those are three of my kind of top 10 most hated, if you will. Although I have to say, even though I work in transformation, the paradigm shift is particularly annoying to me as well. I'm not sure anybody really knows what that looks like.
I'd like him to give us a couple of more. You just asked him the question I wanted, because you know all my life, working life, I've heard all of these expressions like let's think outside the box,
oh, yeah,
et cetera.
Thinking outside the box has gotten so overused that I don't even think it has any impact anymore. I think getting our ducks in a row, singing from the same song sheet. Those make me laugh. I have to say, the elephant in the room, getting our arms around this is one that I find particularly annoying. I could go on and on, but there are so many that we just seem to throw around these days. And then there's some really current ones. You know, we've been talking a lot about ecosystems, like corporate ecosystems. I think that's been in vogue lately for the last year or two because of, you know, the whole focus on actual ecosystems. I don't know how we found our way to translate that one into the business world, but we did. So there's a whole lineage of them that if I could just get people to check the box and stop using them, I'd be thrilled. It's kind of a one-man war against buzzwords.
Back to you, Dan.
So following that, do you think there's some troll somewhere who writes all this stuff up and then sends it out over the internet and everybody believes it's from somebody really smart?
There might be. I have to say, when I was working at Deloitte, I have only great things to say about my time there. It was one of the best experiences I ever had, and I met some great people, and I'm still friends with them today. But I think that the consulting companies start these things. And I don't know why, but man, I heard those things curled around with reckless abandon when I was there. And then when I actually went to the other side, when I left consulting and went into industry, I heard it a lot less. But there were enough of us consultants who had left consulting in the industry that now we were starting to proliferate it there. So I don't know if there's a troll back there. That would actually be a better answer, because we could just find that troll and, you know, find a way to take him out of business. But I think it's worse than that. I think it's all of us in the consulting world who kind of throw this stuff around. I don't know why we do it.
The troll's probably in Russia. That's where he is.
He probably is. He's hacking something.
Right. So let me go to a little more serious subject here. Given the dramatic, even though some people on the left are unwilling to admit it, but most people who are who have powers of observation can clearly see that something happened after Donald Trump became president of the United States, and whether it's jobs or whether it's capital coming in to build plant and equipment and the highest number of new hires in manufacturing in 4 years and 40 years, excuse me. So what are the challenges in this new economy? I mean, we've got one side of the economy that says this is never going to hold up. It should have never happened. It was crazy. The valuations are off the chart. And then there's another group that says, if Mr. Trump is successful in dramatically reducing corporate taxes and dramatically reducing the restrictions, the regulations that the Obama administration's put on, this economy might generate 4 to 6% in GDP. And if that's true, what kind of challenges does that provide or create for American business today?
You know, it's a really good question. And one of the things that, you know, we all remember when the economy was booming before the Great Recession. And what was interesting about that, and I think we might find ourselves in a very similar place if this plays out the way you just described it, but it just because the economy is booming doesn't mean that companies are working efficiently. And what I tend to find back then was that there was all sorts of resources available, but it didn't necessarily always translate into the optimal either earnings or revenue generation or product quality. So that there was just like this lack of efficiency that resulted from the ability to not be totally constrained. You certainly don't want the other problem where the pendulum swung the other way and things are so tight that we can barely get things done. But there was something interesting that came out of that, which was companies had to really think differently about making sure that they were being efficient with resources. And so you have the tendency potentially going back where we're spending more than we should to get the outputs that we're getting. And that'll be an interesting thing to see if that plays out, because if it does, it lends itself to a lot of opportunities to kind of go in and take a look at organizations to say, look, just because you have resource XYZ, are you actually getting the throughput and the output that you think you should be generating from that level of investment? And we may or may not.
So, but do you think that the increase in the increase in economic growth will reverse the trend of outsourcing in terms of people like yourself, and corporations will go back and start adding full-time staff to do some of the things that you're doing? Or have they become so trained? You think it could? Okay.
I think it could, you know, and it'll be an interesting thing for me. You know, as a small business guy, one of the things I'm always trying to do is prognosticate and contingency plan, right? And so how does my business then fit into that? And one of the things actually that has been an evolving part of my business, maybe in alignment with what you're talking about, is over the last, I would say, 2 to 3 years, I've done more and more leadership and executive coaching work than operational enablement of strategy work, which is kind of where I started. And that kind of thing, I think, to your point, that may even get more exponential growth for my business, because if you think about an influx, to your point, of a lot of new people with a lot of new capabilities trying to do a lot of things, there's a lot of opportunity for button heads. There's a lot of opportunities for people to be misaligned with how the organization works. There's just a lot of needs to help coach and mentor people along, because they're spending money bringing in some fairly high-powered individuals into the organization, and you want them to be successful. So I've seen that, and that's kind of how I've evolved my business a little bit. I still do a lot of the strategic to operational enablement work, but I've done more and more of this coaching work to help leaders become successful in evolving organizations.
Well, it just seems to me that we have had, through the last 2 years of the Bush 43 and the 8 years of Obama, we've had 10 years, which is almost a generation that has lived under a less than 2% GDP and high unemployment. And they, in many cases, they don't know. I'm not convinced they're going to know how to deal with a robust economy.
No,
they don't know
exactly
what decisions to make.
And that's kind of where I was going, is they don't know how to opt. They either may be totally inefficient in terms of how they use resources, because they've, to your point, they've never had those resources before. So if you think about a leader or a manager in a role who's been in that role for 10 years and now suddenly the doors are open to what they can do, they may not have any clue how to actually even leverage that resource pool or that additional budget pool, to your point, and how do they make decisions and what the different kinds of decisions that they never even had to make in a more constrained environment.
Now, we've had a couple of times a gentleman who's a demographer on our show and other shows that we've been on with him, and he was talking about, and this was months and months ago, he was suggesting that the election of Donald Trump is a fundamental shift, because he believed that the business of America has not been business for a long time. And Mr. Trump is going to make the business of America business. And as a result, you could see well past a Trump second presidency. You could see another Republican taking over from Trump, whether it's Pence or whoever it is. He's looking at a 15 to 20 year expansion of this economy, which would be unheard of. But I don't think there's people out there that are thinking that it's, if you're like me who believes it's possible to do that, it's hard to find people who agree with you.
Well, your point before is a great one, which is, and let's say that plays out, whether people agree or disagree that it's going to happen. If it does, you have an entire, I don't want to call it an entire generation, but certainly a subset of a generation that's never lived in that kind of world before in the business world. So every rule that they know doesn't really apply anymore. So it's almost like they go back to neophyte status, right? And they're going to need a lot of help.
You know, every place I turn is harassment. You know, and
I know.
I'll just ask you the general question. What's your take on it?
You know, my wife and I talk about this literally every day. I mean, you can't possibly not, right? It's in our faces every day. And I don't know what to believe and what not to believe anymore, right? I mean, there's this perspective of, could that have clearly been the culture that none of us had any sort of awareness of, or that we all kind of knew was happening but didn't have our ability to put a fingerprint on it? Or is it something that has now become so many Me Toos that nobody really knows what's legitimate anymore? So it's a confounding situation, right? What I will say is I have confidence that much of what's out there is true. And that's unfortunate, but it might be the right thing for that kind of thing to get out so that people can kind of see what's been happening. And I honestly, we watch it every single day. You just wonder, you look at the Hollywood stuff, it's almost unbelievable to see kind of the entire industry founded on that, if this stuff is actually as true as many people think that it is.
Well, you know, it's just fascinating to me. But I guess my last question then back to Dan is, what do you think is the major obstacle for small business leaders in the next year and a half?
Well, you know, I think for small businesses, I actually think I don't see as many obstacles as I do opportunities. You know, at this point, I think what I see is the ability to find a way to scale to needs, right? That's where I've been working hard over the last several years. And I know a lot of my colleagues that I talk to who are running small businesses is figuring out how to scale, right? Figuring out how to scale your work. I actually heard a little bit of the person before me and what she was talking about. And that is so true, that you can get completely heads down in what you're doing and not be able to scale. And then you actually lose some of the impact of your business. So to me, scalability is one of the most important things for a small business, because it's so easy to do all the work or to have a few people do all the work. And then you miss kind of the whole point of why you started the small business in the first place. So I think it's a scalability issue. At least I know it is in my world.
So let's go back, and I'm going to confront you, and I'm going to say that picking the low-hanging fruit is just as absurd as how scalable is your business.
Why is that?
Everybody talks about it. Well, because it's scalable.
Oh,
can you make
point.
This
good point? Good point.
Is your business scalable? And if you don't answer it yes, nobody wants to talk to you. But
yeah,
maybe a business is better off by not being scalable. Because it changes. Here comes that word. There's a big paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Because
that's a great point.
So trying to build your business to scale, so that you can scale it, so you can expand it dramatically. Some of the questions that have to be asked: Can I get the right human resources? Can I get the right manufacturing capacity? Can I deliver? Can I serve? Can I fill the slots?
Great point.
right now we're about 4.1 unemployment rate in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to think that if this economy, if Goldman is right that they think in 2018 the economy could, the GDP could be north of 4. I mean, we haven't seen 4 in your lifetime, probably.
Yeah.
And so at 4, where are we going to get the skilled people? Are we going to bring them in on the visas? So we're going to import people from all over the world because we don't have enough skilled people in the United States? I mean, I think that's a real challenge. I mean, it's great to be able to talk about it, a GDP of 4, 5, 6%, but where do we get the human resources? It isn't going to be robotics.
No, and that's such a really important point. And this is where one of the things I talk to a lot of my clients about, and they're more and more willing to listen, I would say, now than they were 10 years ago, is, you know, and this could sound like a soundbite buzzword too, but get down to the details of it, it's not, is this concept of workforce planning. Nobody really thought strategically about workforce planning, at least in the client world that I worked in, and even when I was internal, 8 to 9 to 10 plus years ago, it was kind of this foreign concept. And you're hitting on some of the really important things, which is, hey, if this thing is going to grow and the unemployment is what it is, like, what are the skill sets we need in this organization 2, 3, 4 years from now, and how are we going to get them? And what are we going to build versus what are we going to go try to find? And how are we going to build them? And how are we going to find them, right? So that whole operationalization of this concept of, like, planning what our workforce needs actually are and the skill sets and the capabilities. And to your point, if we're trying to be scalable or if we're not, you know, the concern about not being scalable is, are you going to still be here, right? This is one of the big challenges that healthcare is facing right now. Those organizations are having to undergo major transformation because if they don't, they will cease to exist, their world. And so it's an interesting thing to think about, like, what are the skilled needs that we actually have to have, and then how are we going to actually fulfill those? And that needs time, right? That's not something that you can just flip a switch, to use another buzzword, and, like, suddenly we've got the skill sets, or suddenly we found them overseas. And so that's a really important strategic thing that more and more of my clients are actually willing to engage in that conversation and figure that out.
Yeah, see, it goes along with what we were just talking about, and that is that the operating mode of the last 10 years with an economy growing at something less than 2%, businesses didn't have to think longer term because nothing was really happening. You know, we were able to do whatever we were doing, and everything was fine, and here comes the status quo, but that's what it was. And now all of a sudden management, who might be ill-equipped to think in terms of strategic planning or tactical planning over the next 3 to 5 years, is now has to look at it and say, wait a minute, how do we do this?
That's right.
It'd be a great opportunity for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It is.
Dan, unfortunately, we have to cut this short. It's been really a great experience listening to you. We've been talking with James Sudakow. He's an author, which I love the book, Picking the Low-Hanging Fruit. And he's a consultant. Your website, James, for our listeners?
Yeah, you can find me at www.jamessudakow, and last name is spelled S-U-D-A-K-O-W, so jamessudakow.com. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook as well.
A link to his website will be on www.recalculating.biz tonight. Thank you so much, James, for joining us.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having
me.
James. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, good talking to you.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures, that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Source Adventures is the brainchild of founder Kyle Davidson, who started his company with a mission to help New Yorkers get out and explore the beautiful rural areas outside the city. I don't know if you're aware, but we've had a couple of incidents lately where New Yorkers are thinking maybe they should head for the hills. But anyway, Kyle, welcome to the program. Tell us a little bit about Source Adventures and a little bit about yourself and your website.
Hey, yeah, thanks so much for having me. Source Adventures we're an outdoor adventure travel company. I started the company 4 years ago in 2013, and our mission is really simple. It's to make the outdoors more accessible to people who live in the city. And the way we do that is by providing transportation, guides, and equipment, and pretty much everything you need to get out and experience the outdoors. So we run a lot of bus trips to go skiing, snowboarding, whitewater rafting, river tubing, kayaking. We do wine tours, all kinds of different activities, and basically all year long. And so now I started the company 4 years ago in New York City. New York is still our biggest market, but we're now operating trips out of New York, Boston, D.C., Chicago, and San Francisco.
What made you decide this was something that people wanted?
Well, I used to work for a company called Living Social back in 2011. I started there, and Living Social is one of the big daily deals companies. And back at that time, there was a lot of funding around the Daily Deals concept, and Living Social, to differentiate itself, launched a adventure travel division called Adventures, Living Social Adventures. And so I was the operations manager for all the New York City adventures, and New York was our biggest market at Living Social. And as the company grew and sort of changed, the Adventures division became less of a priority. And so in 2013, that division was shut down. And at the time, we had scaled it all the way to 30 different markets around the world. And so we kind of scaled that back, and the company just shut down that division entirely, which kind of left this opening to kind of rebuild what we had started there. So I had some kind of inside knowledge and understanding of the industry, and had really built a lot of these products already. And Source Adventures is sort of the reincarnation of that program that we had built at Living Social that no longer existed. So that was kind of my insight.
Dan, back to you.
Thank you. So, Kyle, take us through, if you would, that experience. You know, when we're trying to help small business entrepreneurs, people start businesses, make their business more productive. And one of the things that is of great value to them is what did their peers and contemporaries learn in their decision-making process? So take us back to the decision that you made to close that operation, and then, in essence, somewhat have reincarnated in a different way sometime later. So take us through that experience, if you would.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we had really a strong proof of concept at Living Social, and had built this kind of rather large program. I mean, in New York, we took, in just a few short years, we took almost 100,000 people on trips out of New York City alone, and nationwide, many, many more than that. So we really knew that this was something that people wanted. And I think, you know, I was lucky enough to know that this concept had kind of been validated and was able to validate it myself at a different company and with a fair bit of funding. So, you know, when I made the decision to start Sourced Adventures, I had a really good indication that this was going to be a successful concept. So I think any way that you can, if you can find some proof of concept beforehand, that's always going to be really, really powerful. And I was lucky enough to kind of have that. But the decision to start Sourced Adventures was still not an easy one. You know, it's a lot of risk starting your own business, and there's a lot of things you have to worry about. But knowing that this was truly something that people wanted to get outside, and, you know, especially in New York City, you know, it's hard to own a car. It's expensive to own a car. It's expensive to rent a car. It's pretty much expensive to get outside the city in any way, shape, or form. And if you are lucky enough to be able to do that, it's extremely challenging, right? Like from a time perspective, and how much effort it takes. So we found that when we were able to simplify that for our customers, it was something they really, really loved. And that's proven to be true in other markets as well.
So you had, when you say proof of concept, you had, because of your own experience, you saw what the demand was. But what happened that caused you to close that down?
Well, it wasn't really my decision at the time. The leaders of the company, Living Social, made that decision. And it was a business decision for them. You know, ultimately, the Adventures division was not their core product. They were kind of using it to just differentiate themselves from the competition. And so it was kind of lucky, because what to them was sort of just a side project and something to hopefully, you know, boost marketing and customer acquisition, was really within the company a full-fledged separate business within itself. And for those, you know, maybe haven't heard so much about Living Social, and it's kind of like Groupon. It's basically the daily deal voucher model at the time anyway. And Living Social raised almost $1 billion to build out this concept. And so our division was, although it was fairly large to us, it was fairly small within the overall organization. So for them, when they started to lose money and when the funding sort of started to dry up, it made sense to start cutting divisions that were not, you know, extraordinarily profitable or on you know, as much on the company mission. And so it was kind of a unique and very cool opportunity, because it allowed me to go out and build Sourced Adventures.
So you're working primarily out of New York. When you created Sourced Adventures, you worked in New York. That was your principal market?
Yeah, and it still is our biggest market. So to date now, over 4 years now, we've taken over 50,000 people on trips, and majority of those have been in New York City.
So where have you been taking people out of New York City on their trips? What do they want to do?
We do, in the wintertime, we do a lot of ski trips, and primarily from New York City, we do ski trips to Hunter Mountain and Mountain Creek. And Hunter Mountain is in the Catskills, just about 2.5 hours outside of New York City. And then we also do a Southern Vermont two-night ski weekend that we run pretty regularly over the winter. And so ski trips are really our biggest winter product. And we also do a night snow tubing and brewery tour, where we take you night snow tubing on Saturday night and then hit a local brewery afterwards for some food and beers.
Oh, that one sounds like a good, fun thing.
Yeah, people tend to like it.
Dan, can I jump in on a question?
Sure.
What represents your average participant?
So our average participant is usually between the ages of 25 and 35. We do get a lot of kind of the millennial generation interested in our products. Our average participant doesn't own a car. And they usually work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, kind of traditional schedule. And, you know, maybe don't have as much time, or knowledge to plan this stuff for themselves on the weekends. And so we kind of solve that problem for them. And of course they have, you know, some disposable income, but really these trips are kind of for everyone, you know, and it's a great way to meet people. It's a great way to, you know, get offline, go and experience the outdoors with other like-minded adventures. But we really, really focus on making all of our trips accessible, not just from the, you know, with transportation and things like that, but also easy for anyone to do. You don't need prior experience. You know, you don't need to be a professional skier. You don't need to be a professional rafter. You don't need a lot of outdoor experience. We really want to make this something that anyone can go online, book a trip, and not worry about, you know, having all the right gear or equipment, and just kind of show up and have a good time and with other people who enjoy the same types of things that they do.
Dan, one more question. What is a trip cost?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Trips are generally around $100 for the day. Our overnight trips are a little bit more when they, you know, involve accommodations and things like that. But yeah, generally speaking, most of our trips are in the $100 range. So that usually for the day will include round trip transportation from New York City or Boston or Chicago or DC. Round trip transportation will have a guide, a sourced adventures guide on the bus, you know, ensuring that every part of the day goes smoothly. The lift ticket or activity, whatever it is included, along with the equipment for that. And we usually always include lunch, and more often than not, we include a drink of some kind, whether that's a beer or a hot beverage or you know, something tasty for the day.
Where do you find your guides?
So we have a fantastic team of guides we're really, really proud of, and we've been building this team now for several years. Our team of guides is about 55 part-time guides that we have throughout our different markets, and mostly, surprisingly, they are referrals. So we have a very strict hiring process, and it just happens to be that we get a lot of great referrals from our existing guides who have similar outdoor experience and leadership experience, and we make sure to hire guides that really are kind of proficient in leading large groups of adults that can kind of handle any situation we throw at them.
Dan, back to you.
So these are basically day trip adventures.
Exactly.
That's fair. I assume
in
most major cities you're going by bus.
Yeah, you're going by bus. You're sharing transportation together to get to the mountain or the river or wherever it is we're heading for the day.
Is skiing the most popular? Is that the most popular thing that you do during the year?
It's definitely one of the most popular. I would say our three most popular activities are skiing, then whitewater rafting, and river tubing.
River tubing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a lazy river tube, and what you do is we give you your tube, you tube down the river, and then usually the bus is waiting for you at the end. We grab some lunch and then head over to a local brewery and do a beer tasting at a brewery.
Mm.
Hey, Dan, we've been missing out.
I was in the Boy Scouts, and I was a Boy Scout leader, so I'm familiar with some of these. So you're not a travel agent per se, because you're not going very far, but you're more like a fantasy adventure.
Yeah, I think what's kind of interesting about our product is there's really nothing quite like it that exists. I mean, ski buses have been around for a long time, but the concept of taking a bus to go river tubing, with a large group of people, is sort of new. I mean, people usually drive to go river tubing, or they drive to go out rafting in a kind of a one-off sort of way with friends. And so what we're really doing is taking those experiences and turning them into kind of group activities where you can go with a bunch of people, you know, who maybe live in the area and share transportation. And it really brings the cost way, way down for everyone because of the group discounts we're able to get and leveraging our group sizes. I should also mention that we have expanded into international trips as well. It's still a growing part of our business, but we currently run trips to Iceland, Mexico, and Nicaragua as well.
And what activities on those trips?
So those trips function a little bit more like a traditional travel agent package. So that would be like hotel inclusion, flight inclusion, and a couple different tours. But our agents are reservation agents on our team will work with each one of our customers to kind of really plan out the experience and make sure it's everything they want. So usually it's a choice of a few different tours that you can kind of pick and choose which ones you want. And the idea is what we, our kind of goal long-term is we want to be your kind of one-stop shop adventure company, right? So you can come on day trips with us on the weekends. And then when you have vacation time or you want to go on a longer trip, you can come on one of our international trips as well.
So the interesting about your model is given your aggregate group transportation dynamic, there's a different kind of situation. There's an organization called Outward Bound that corporations will use for team building.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you thought about merchandising your day trips to corporations as a team building exercise.
Yeah, we have started doing that. In fact, we have done quite a few of them. It's kind of funny. It was not something we intended to do from the onset. And we just started to get all these companies reaching out to us. So it's still something that we kind of, you know, if you go on our website, it's kind of hidden on the site, but there is a page that's for corporate trips. And It seems like no matter what we do, we continue to do more and more of those. And so to this point, we've actually done corporate trips for companies such as Google, ZocDoc, Nationwide, HelloFresh, The Muse, and many, many others. A lot of startups and a lot of tech companies who, you know, want to treat their employees to a fun day outing. And or a ski trip or something. And so a lot of times they'll come to us and we'll plan those for them. So it's actually one of the fastest growing parts of our business is those corporate trips. It's still not our core product or anything, but it's something that we are doing more and more of, it seems.
Well, as the economy expands and corporations are putting a lot of new people together in trying to expand their business, I would think that this would be a natural for you to go to corporations and talk about the team building. I mean, I would think that'd be a even faster growing part of your business.
Yeah, it's funny. It seems like even having not paid a ton of attention to it the first couple of years, it seemed like there was this inevitability that we would start doing these because companies just keep reaching out to us. And I've noticed it really is. I mean, you make a really good point. It's a huge need for these companies, especially as the economy is growing. And then of course, like as business culture is changing, right? Like it used to be that these things were not normal, but now, you know, companies like all the big tech companies like Google and Apple and Facebook, they've set this precedent where, you know, you have to have catered lunches and you have to have wellness programs and you have to have all these benefits that go beyond just the traditional benefits companies offer and into kind of, you know, activities and recreation and making sure employees inside and outside the office are taken care of and happy. And competition for great employees and talent is stiff, right? So as these companies start to catch more and more onto this idea, I do see it being a much bigger part of our business going forward.
Where are your growth plans? Where are you going to go besides Boston, New York, and Chicago? Are you looking at other cities?
Yeah, we're looking at a couple other cities. I mean, it's been really exciting to see that this concept has worked in other markets, especially because, you know, there's not as much of the challenge with cars, but people seem to really respond to it. I mean, I think in the days today, you know, in a way, like Uber and all this stuff has made it a lot easier for us to suggest, you know, sharing transportation to go on these activities because people have gotten a lot more used to it. So I do see it working in other markets. I mean, our long-term goals are to continue growing into other markets with our local programming and then to really build out the international programming as well. And that's really pretty exciting stuff because, you know, the price points are a little higher, the margins are bigger, and we really do see this like kind of ecosystem developing where we're not just, you know, a bus to the ski slopes, but more like a year-round adventure travel provider, almost like a travel agent, but just with kind of more of a modern spin where you can actually go online and book these trips, but really be a part of our community and be a part of this community of adventurers and people who like to travel and go on trips on the weekends. And we see that kind of community growing and people hopefully, you know, trusting us to plan their travel year round.
How do you promote your business?
We do a lot of digital marketing, so Facebook and Google advertising. We've gotten quite good at that. Email marketing is a big channel for us. You know, we have a big email list now. And then we have a few different we have a referral program that seems to work really, really well. People love our trips. We have incredible reviews. We have hundreds of five-star reviews across all different review platforms. And so people like to share the experience. I think it's a cool feeling to get into the office on Monday morning and, you know, hey, what'd you do this weekend? And you can tell people, oh, well, I went whitewater rafting. And people are like, wait, where did you do that? And so it is a fun story to tell. And I think, you know, people really like to tell that story. And so word of mouth and word of mouth referrals have been a huge, huge part of that. So we've sort of facilitated that by building out a online referral program as well, where you can, you know, if you give someone your code and they book with your code, then you'll get a credit to use on a future trip. That's grown really fast. And then we have an affiliate program. We have a lot of distribution channels. So all the different OTAs we work with, you know, OTAs are online travel agencies. Those are like the Expedias, the Viators, the Groupons, and that kind of thing. And so it's really kind of a complex network of different digital marketing efforts that really have helped us grow the business.
How many people do you have on staff?
So we are 6 full-time, including myself. And then we have, as I mentioned earlier, about 55 part-time guides who help us actually execute the trips on site.
And if you expand your business, are you going to, you think it'll be difficult finding guides or not?
Well, we haven't had any trouble with it. You know, hiring guides is a challenge, but we, you know, over, you know, the 4 years that we've been around now and being able to take the tens of thousands of people we have on trips, you have to get good at hiring guides and hiring guides quickly and efficiently and making sure there's still a lot of quality control. And so I'm proud to say we've gotten really, really good at it. We have a very tuned in system that we use to find guides and hire them and then train them and have them ready to go and lead trips on their own relatively quickly. But it's not easy. We have gotten really good at it. We've been able to boot up these secondary markets where we actually don't have full-time staff on the ground. We just have part-time staff on the ground, and it's really gone very successfully. We've been operating in D.C. now for about this will be our third winter season. This will be our second winter season in Boston, and it's our first winter season in Chicago, but we already have leaders on the ground ready to go.
I heard earlier that you're expanding, et cetera, but would you say your service is primarily for people who want to meet other people as well? Seems like it would be an ideal place to really get to know somebody.
Yeah, it is. We have all kinds of fun stories of people meeting each other on trips and then becoming best friends or even, you know, becoming romantically involved. And it is really fun. I mean, especially today, you know, where people are online with all the apps and things to meet other people. I think it's refreshing and cool to be able to go on a trip and meet someone kind of the old-fashioned way. And there is a bit of a filter, right, because everyone is chosen to come on this adventure. So there is some kind of, there's a prerequisite of wanting to get outside and experience the outdoors. So I think that it creates a really cool vibe and a really cool group of people who really enjoy each other's company. It's something we're really, really kind of proud of. And again, our trips, you know, it's not just about having an outdoor experience, but it really is just about being with other like-minded people and doing something different on the weekends. You know, instead of going to the bar or going to brunch, you know, you come on one of our trips and there's it's a lot of fun.
Well, Dan, we're getting pretty close to the end. I guess my question is, what are the two things you've learned that you pass on to others?
I think, you know, first of all, distribution is key, right? And whatever it is that you're doing, whether you're selling, you know, a physical product on your website or a digital product or really in any respect, distribution is key, right? You have to know where your customers are and how you can get in touch with them. For us, a big, like, as I kind of mentioned, our growth has been attributed to many things, but working with the different distribution channels, the different online travel agencies who distribute our product to their audiences for a commission. While we don't love paying out those commissions, it has really helped us grow because we can tap into these new audiences. So I think, like, whatever industry you're in, there's someone already distributing that type of product somewhere. And if you can work out who that is and how they're getting in touch with their audience and work with them directly, that is extremely helpful. You know, affiliates, any type of distribution you can find is a great way to grow. And then I think the other thing I would say, like, the power of digital marketing. You know, it was hard even for me to admit at one point that was just so, you know, that there was so much more I had to learn there. And I think if you can find someone better at it than you are, there's a lot to be gained. And ultimately, I mean, I think just hiring great people. You know, I have a great team around me. They are absolutely awesome, and that really enables our growth as well. So, you know, I think and we take that approach with our guides. We take that approach with everything. We really just find it really important that every single member of the team is kind of on board with the mission and what we're doing. And I think it's really helped us stay happy and have fun doing this, what we're doing. So, yeah, I think those would be, like, kind of my big takeaways.
Kyle, your website again for people?
Yeah, you can find out more about us at sourcedadventures.com. That's S-O-U-R-C-E-D, adventures with an S, .com. Or just Google Sourced Adventures, and you can check out all of our different trips and things. And we hope some will come out and join us.
Well, I don't know about you, Dan, but this has been a very illuminating time. Any final thoughts, Dan?
I just wanted to ask Kyle one more question. Where do you go?
Where
do you
want
to get away?
Well, I've been on all of our trips many, many times. I would say one of our coolest ones is our Nicaragua trip. It's really a lot of fun, and I really enjoy Central America. I think it's a great place, and nothing like getting some warm weather and time on the beach. So and maybe even some surfing. So I would highly recommend that.
Okay, super. Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And enjoy your Christmas.
Yes, we've been talking with Kyle Davidson, who's the head of Sourced Adventures. A link to his website will be on recalculating.biz tonight. You can also hear all of our programs, past and future, on recalculating.biz. If you like what you heard, tell others about it. If not, talk to us at editor@recalculating.biz.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating Small Business tip of the day. Do you know what spilled milk smells like in a few days in a hot car? Many small business people use their trucks or cars as transportation for them and, in some cases, employees. It's also a place to do business and you want to keep it clean. I have a builder friend that took a new employee to a job site who packed his lunch. At lunchtime, he bought a carton of milk to go with his sandwich. One day, the worker didn't finish the milk and set the bottle on the floor. When he shut the door, the milk fell over and spilled on the floor and sat there for the rest of the day, and then the employee returned and noticed that the milk had been spilled. My friend tried everything to get out that foul smell, but after spending a considerable sum on carpet cleaners, eventually he had to replace the carpet. Make sure you carry at least one roll of paper towels. The nose you save may be your own. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your small business tip of the day.
Well, we enjoyed the show today, and we encourage you to go to the website, as I said before, recalculating.biz, listen to last shows, and we're also going to start giving you some heads up about who's coming in the future. And we thank you for listening, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.